Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hello and welcome to the Dork Forest. It's me, Jackie Cation. You know the websites, JackieCation.com, DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com. If you like a determiner, you can donate to the show using PayPal or Venmo. You go to the websites, you find out where I'm doing stand-up comedy. Rangers of the Dork Forest, I love you dearly, and thank you so much. Feel free to go to Apple, rate and review the show. 5 stars would be great. Let's do the credits. Mike Rickberg sang and wrote that song that you just heard, and he will be singing at the end, the Mexican Hat Dance. Patrick Brady is going to fix this audio and video, and we thank all the stars for that. Let's get into the show. Oh my gosh, Jackie Cation with a returning guest to the Dork Forest, Jason Clam. Jason Clam, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Is it okay to correct you and say that it's Clam?
Is it Clam?
It is Clam.
We've known each other for nigh on a decade.
Yep.
I do like Clam. That's interesting. Why do you
everybody,
think they went
everybody
with that?
Everybody misremembers. Why? I don't know, but do you want to know what it means?
Sure.
First of all, it means ravine, right? So like, the people who had that name grew up or were raised near ravines, lived near ravines. The other problem with the name is it also does mean moist. And that is everyone's least favorite word, including mine, but it does mean moist.
So. What language are we talking about here? Bavarian?
German, sorry.
Talking. Okay.
Yeah, very specifically Bavarian. That is where we come from. Yeah.
Bavaria. It's all so rustic. Mm-hmm. So Jason Clam.
Mm-hmm.
It's at Jason Clam, right? All
yeah,
the things.
Well, on Instagram, but it's at jclom on Twitter because I didn't understand how handles worked then.
And so. Twitter blows. So Instagram is at Jason Clam, KLAMM. And I have this to say is that we're taking an ad at around 20 minutes today. Very exciting. So don't bogart my ad space is what I'm saying. And because I don't know what I'm doing. It's only been 17 years of doing this podcast. Mm-hmm. Previously, I was on your podcast where I got to pick a comedy album and then we dissected it. What was the name of that podcast? I'm sure it's still out there in the ether. People could listen to it because it was super cool.
Well, thank you. It's called Comedy on Vinyl. I technically ended it like a year and a half ago, but every once in a while we'll do an episode if somebody special wants to come on.
You know. I bet. And now you have... you have a book coming out in September.
I do.
This will come out August 15th, 2023, but your book comes out in September and it is about sketch comedy, if I'm correct.
That is correct. 1990s TV sketch comedy, if you want to be very specific. And
called We're Not Worthy, which is a quote from a sketch that I can't remember what it was.
It's from Wayne's World. And the funny thing is, the Wayne's World sketches are not that memorable. The movie I love. I do happen to love the movie because I'm of just the right age. But that's what it's from.
Okay.
There's a whole long subtitle that I can't remember, so I'm not going to bother saying it.
Well, no need to push that envelope then. No reason to lose it. What? Here's my question is, what do you think we're going to talk about today?
I think, now I gave you several options, but I do believe you said that the one that we should probably pick is the first one I said, which is the television program News Radio. And now everybody tunes out.
Oh no, because people love News Radio. I have
good.
A gossip thing about News Radio that, I mean, that I will tell you, but it is not... it's a horrible story, of course, because it's a Phil Hartman story. So it's going to be super sad.
Yeah.
But here's a scoop. News Radio sitcom, Dave Foley from Kids in the Hall. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you what I know about News Radio. First of all, I'm not a huge fan of sitcoms.
Fair.
Very sad. Liked them when I was a child because I was a child. And then I grew up and I went away from childish things. That's not true at all. but for some reason, sitcoms, they're hard for me to grab me. So here's the question. So here's what I know. Dave Foley's in it. Phil Hartman's in it. Dave Foley, sketch comic. Phil Hartman, stand-up comic, I believe.
And sketch.
and sketch, or he might have just been a sketch comic. I don't know if he did stand up.
I can't remember. As you're saying it now, I'm wondering. I read his damn biography, but it was just depressing. So I'm trying. Right. Yeah, I don't remember now.
Who were the women folk in it?
Well, you've got your Maura Tierney. You've got your Candy Alexander. You've got Vicki Lewis. And that's it.
That's it. Three women. Yeah. And I think then there was the old guy who played the owner of the news station.
You got Stephen Root. Yep.
And then you got
some problematic additions towards the end.
The idea, it was sort of like WKRP in Cincinnati, but much quippier and darker. Right.
Yeah. And good. I say that like I even remember an episode of WKRP, but it got so frequently compared to it that
because it took place
just
because
it's a radio station.
Yeah.
But it's a news radio station. And I think their goal was like, let's basically never address the fact that we're in a news station because it almost never had anything to do with the news or radio.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. I mean, that was like. Sure, that's where it all happened, but most of the shit that, like, there's a whole episode, which is my favorite episode, where Phil Hartman is addicted to old rotten sandwiches in a machine. And that's not about radio. That's just about beautiful human addiction and problems, and it's great.
Oh, my God. Wait. So, I want to get to the sandwich thing. Don't get me wrong. But I want to know why, it's called News Radio.
Yeah.
It's supposedly about a news radio station in the 90s because it was what did it run? When did it run?
It was 1995 to 1999 on NBC at question mark. It was one of the most bounced around shows on TV.
Oh, okay. And so just four seasons, which is hard.
Five, because the first season was one of those truncated six episode seasons. So it's five seasons, but 95 to 99.
Okay. So, were there 100 episodes? Did they get to go to syndication, which was a big thing?
This, I can imagine, has to have pissed them off. They got to 97.
There's always a reason, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Was there a drama about why there was a reason?
The thing is, by the time they got to season five, few people gave a shit anymore. And the idea of pushing it beyond that did not seem to appeal to anybody. And just because that truncated first season is the only reason, I think. They could have squeezed a few in there, but...
Right, because 97 episodes, they are three episodes in 90s parlance of giant money.
Yeah.
But now, with streaming, here's my other weird question.
Uh-huh.
It's in syndication anyway, right? You can still watch it.
Yeah, and I'm sure they're making nothing off of it.
Oh, right, because streaming pays a penny.
From what I understand, yeah, it's a gem.
Yeah, okay, so are the first three seasons, like all sitcoms, the best seasons?
You know, it's interesting. Yes, yes. Season four, though, is fucking phenomenal. And then season five is maligned for the wrong reasons and should be celebrated for the good stuff that's there.
Now let us get into it.
Yeah.
First season, six episodes. They establish. What do they establish? They establish,
It's like, well, those first six seasons or six episodes are very much, they're in the hands of Jim Burrows, my good friend Jimmy. I call him Jimmy.
Do you?
I've met him once.
Okay.
Yeah, we're good friends. No, he was trying to make it Cheers and help push along the romance between Dave and Lisa, Maura Tierney and Dave Foley's characters. And that's in there, but they also very much wanted to get them to bang and be done with it and deal with the aftermath because they thought that was funnier than the Sam and Diane BS. But I think, from what I understand, my good buddy Jimmy wanted them to stretch it out a little bit longer, but they refused to. So
okay. So those first six episodes was just, we find out that Dave Foley and Maura Tierney are in love.
Mm-hmm.
And that always makes for comedy gold.
Mm-hmm.
So Dave Foley, let's go through the characters, if you would. So
sure.
Dave Foley's, what's his character's name?
Dave Nelson.
Dave Nelson, and he is the manager.
He is the news director, he's the news director. Jimmy is technically Stephen Root's character, Jimmy James, named after the Beastie Boys song, is the station manager, the owner.
Was he really named after the Beastie Boys song?
Yeah.
Okay, this is such a writer's room nerd out. Okay, good
for
that.
Oh, those guys. They are the biggest. They are the most Gen X group of Gen X dudes I've ever interviewed in my life. They are
just
purely that.
If you guys want to watch a Gen X sitcom, Mm-hmm. You hook yourselves up, get yourself some news radio. Okay.
Yeah.
So Jimmy James.
You got your Jimmy James. Then Maura Tierney is a reporter, sort of producer. It's, by the way, it gets nebulous at some point and nobody cares. Andy Dick's character, there's problematic guy number one. He plays Matthew. And Matthew is the dipshit, sometimes cub reporter, sometimes producer, sometimes other things. Phil Hartman is one of the two news anchors. He plays Bill McNeil. Candy Alexander plays Catherine. Oh, my God. Catherine Duke. She's one of the other news anchors.
Okay.
Station electrician. That's a very complicated part. It's played by the other problematic one, Joe Rogan. He plays Joe Garelli. And there's an ongoing joke about, oh, your last name is Garelli. Nobody ever remembers that that's his last name. And Vicki Lewis, who I think is the unsung hero of the show, plays Beth. No last name. She is the receptionist. Her last name is never discovered or exposed.
Oh, really? Okay.
She may not have one. There's a whole episode where they're writing out a check to her. I think it's Wayne Fetterman's writing out a check. What's the last name? No last name, she says. So she has none. It's great. And I think she's named after the Kiss song, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, Beth, I hear you calling. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, those lyrics are still in my head. Let's jump to the unsung hero. Mm-hmm. When is she introduced? Is she introduced immediately?
Yes, she absolutely is. She's one of the first characters. And I will say, anybody, if you're dipping in, the pilot is a great pilot as pilots go. It is not the characters as you will see them, but it's pretty close. Okay. And she's a standout. She's great. She's the wacky redheaded receptionist, but like she becomes so much more. She becomes this kind of daughter to Jimmy James. Like he's trying to take care of her and trying to, because she's poor as shit. She's eating ketchup packet soup and all that stuff. And he's trying to get her to, he's trying to teach her business acumen, which he sort of succeeds at eventually. And
there pathos in news radio?
A little. They don't like it. They hated it. All of them hated doing it.
Right. They feel like a group of people who don't want any part of pathos.
No, they don't. And here's the thing, though. I'm a sucker. So the couple times it happens, I'm like, oh, this is really good and sweet. And like, and one of, like, I remember once talking about the show with Jesse Thorne and him being like, you know, it's their family. And then that's one of the reasons. I'm like, you're right. Like that dynamic is there, but none of them would really ever admit that because they're sarcastic, ironic, bitter Gen Xers. And I say that with love in my heart for every one of those
okay,
people.
Okay. So who's the dad? Is Jimmy James the dad?
Jimmy James. For the most part, he's the dad or the weird uncle.
Who's the other dad?
That's Dave Foley.
Oh, although, Dave Foley's the dad.
Although Lisa's, Maura Tierney's character, Lisa, is like, she's easily the more competent, which is one of the few things they did right on the show in terms of gender dynamics, because this is a bunch of dudes not knowing what to do. They at least made her more competent and never really gets the opportunity until later in the show to basically one-up him and become the new manager for at least a period of time.
Oh, so she becomes a manager for a period of time.
Does
he have, is he butthurt about it?
A little bit. And it's so complicated. And at some point he's very much like, he's accepted. He's like, no, this is actually probably a good thing. And then he decides he's going to become evil to get his part, to get it back. And everybody's like, yeah, you're evil. Very good. That's very cute, Dave, that you're evil.
Right,
there's
right.
A whole episode called Pure Evil and it's fantastic.
That's, okay. So in the first season and a half, right?
Yeah.
So what are your favorite episodes there?
I would have to pull up a list because I think you made a list. So let me pull up the news radio episode.
You guys, Jason Klom, by the way, is pulling up a list. And I'm just going to remind you that he has a book coming out. It's called We're Not Worthy.
Thank you.
And if you go to sketchcomedybook.com, that, I think, takes you to jasonklom.com. So
it does, but a specific page there that's got all like some pre-order links, some info about the book, some trailers that I did for the book, that kind of stuff.
Perfect.
I did like six trailers for some reason.
Nice.
So it's hard because, you know, I did this whole podcast about news radio because I'm obsessed with it. And I do think there are no bad episodes. There are some good episodes, but I can't find fault in any of them completely.
This is a perfect dorkdom then, because if you can't find fault in any of them and yet you say that two of the characters are problematic.
Oh, well, I won't say the characters so much.
Oh,
the people
the
who
characters,
play them.
The characters aren't. Oh, the characters are.
The characters
did they nail
are fine.
The character?
Yeah. Joe Rogan's great as a guy named Joe who has one note to him. Andy Dick is great. He's a great physical comedian. And that sucks. It's too bad that he's that funny. That's all I'm saying.
Well, okay. Yeah. So pick an episode. And then I do want to talk about the good parts of those characters, because that's neat.
Yeah. Well, so if we're going to talk season one.
Okay.
The best episode, and maybe the most acknowledged as a best episode, is Smoking. And pardon me. And that is a whole episode where Phil Hartman's character, is trying to quit smoking.
Okay.
Dave is trying to quit coffee. And that is all based on real life. Dave Foley is a acknowledged coffee addict. And it is just, there are combinations of, it's almost a comedy of manners, because the two of them are, they're trying to hide the fact that they're still smoking or still drinking coffee. And there's a lot of back and forth, some really great physical bits, where there's a whole moment where Dave is accusing Bill of smoking and he's just standing there and he's upset until, I'm sorry, Dave. And he lets out this huge puff of smoke, and it's a perfect visual bit.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool that they do physical comedy.
Yeah.
In sitcoms, they try to do it. I mean, historically, there has been great physical comedy, but usually it's trapped in, like, someone's been locked in a freezer or something.
Yeah, that is not something they would do on this show. I will give them that. There's not, and I say this as a fan of Perfect Strangers, there's no Perfect Strangers bullshit going on.
Okay, well, and the thing is they are doing sort of vaudevillian, like, level, just slapsticky kind of physical comedy, and it...
Oh, yeah.
And, well, I mean, and good for them. I mean, that's mm-hmm. That's what those shows kind of should be, right? Because they're supposed to be for the whole family. Yeah. Now, this show was super dark, though, wasn't it?
I think it got dark, but it was also very much, it was just cynical. Like, there's a lot of cynicism.
It was just kind of bitter, or just kind of like a little mean. That's what it was. It's not it dark, it's just mean. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not maybe as mean as other shows of the era. It is not, weirdly, it's weird that you have to couch it like this. It's not as homophobic as other shows of the time. It's not as sexist. It's not really racist, except for the fact that they didn't write for Candy Alexander's part that well, and she eventually left because of it.
Is she a person of color, Candy?
She is a person of color, yes.
There we
go. The only person of color in the main cast on the show. And brilliant, by the way. Great on the show. And
what was her? She was one of the hosts, you said, right?
Yeah, she was one of the other anchors, and just constantly fighting with Bill McNeil. And that was a fantastic dynamic. But they couldn't quite figure out, I don't think, what to do with her beyond that. Beyond every once in a while making her sassy. They acknowledge that, though. Like, they would acknowledge that within the show. Like, you know, she says the word you're looking for is sassy. And like, there's stuff like that. It just... again, they acknowledge their weaknesses, but don't really do a whole lot about fixing.
And do they do, are there, because one of the great things and one of the problems with sitcoms is that you are working with one note characters.
Yeah.
And when they try to go beyond that, they go to, like, pathos, or they go to that third season where we do flashbacks or we find out something.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think in Cheers, we find out he's, like, an alcoholic, and he has a lucky cap, like beer cap or something that he has to carry around, which I think is just their way of saying he had an AA chip that he used. Yeah. Anyway, but I will say, so are all of these characters kind of one note? I mean, when I think about them, they feel a little bit sitcom one note, but they do it very, very well.
I would say you could describe them as I did in a very quick note, but they are more complex than that, if only because if you know the depth to which they went to make these characters function episode to episode. The show was episodic, but the characters were they just kept going. Like, there are solid backstories that continued, and
oh really.
Yeah. Now, they did sometimes pull the old sitcom bullshit, which is like, yeah, it turns out one of these characters is secretly a dentist and they never bring it up again. Like, like, they would pull that kind of stuff. But also, they know the audience
wait a
loves
minute.
That.
That's not done on any others. What other sitcom is doing that where someone is also secretly whatever? I mean, maybe a UPS driver.
Sure.
But like a If you were secretly a dentist, you would be a dentist.
You would think so, yeah. I love it. It's
I think there's better money in being a dentist than who was I spoiler
Andy Dick's
alert.
Character.
Oh, Andy Dick's character is secretly a dentist.
It's great. It's such a and it acknowledges everything how stupid the whole plot is. It's so friggin' beautiful. And what was I gonna? My brain just fried. Right. Just stopped. Just totally stopped.
Okay. Well, this is a good opportunity for us maybe to take a quick break for an ad. That may or may not be here, probably is going to. So live it up, people. And we're back, you guys. Was it? Was there an ad there? Let's find out later if you wanted to go to that website and do that thing. Good for them. Anyway, Jason Klamm. That's who I'm with. Jason Klamm. K-L-A-M-M. It would be it's not a hard A. It's a long A, right? I'm describing those completely backwards. Good for me. So Andy Dick's character is not a mess, but he's a mess. Is that the thing?
No, the character is to be fair a mess, but just in a completely different way. He's not sexually assaulting anybody on the show. So, you know, that's good. That's fun. He's just a goofball. Like, he's a traditional old school vaudeville goofball. Before he did this, the thing he did first that he has since said that he's happy he did not go through was this pilot movie for a spinoff of Get Smart, where he played 99's and Agent What's-His-Fuck's kid. So, and he's great in it. He's great in that. He's perfect for that, but it wasn't good. And then the cold open then for the first 2 to 3 seasons of News Radio, with a few exceptions, are him falling over or hurting himself in some way.
Okay.
Because he is a brilliant pratfall artist for what that's worth. And so
and you know what
that.
It was worth? It was funny. That's what it was worth. Everybody
it
was on
great.
Board. Yeah.
You cannot deny that stuff is funny.
Right.
Yeah.
He is, but he is a mess of a person. I did not know I'm not surprised he's sexually being gross, but I didn't know that. I mean, and granted, assault is defined. I'm 100 years old. Many things that happened to me were not defined as sexual assault.
Right.
That now would be defined. Jackie, that's a crime. And you're like, well, I just never hung out with that guy again because he got a pretty good juke. Mm-hmm. I just got to. Oh, there's that guy. Stay with me. He's handsy. Anyway, so matter of fact, I think when I met the couple of times I've met Andy Dick, 1 or 2 times, he was handsy.
Uh-huh.
And he has that thing, that gay guy thing that happened in the 90s where he's like, I'm gay. I'm going to touch your boobs.
Mm-hmm.
And
and then it turns out, oh, no, he's just pansexual and just likes to molest people. Like, that's basically what he is.
Okay. Is that because this guy, I'm just going to pull an old Jackie and Laurie moment here. This guy grabbed my boobs once and said that it didn't matter. And because he was gay. And I was like, it does. It does matter. They're still
really
going to be mine. You shouldn't grab my fucking elbow without. I don't want to be touched.
Wow.
It's all about asking.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so the wave on this file looks very hot. I'm really hoping that there's not trouble there. So, pick another. Is there a great episode with our other problematic Joe Rogan actor?
He's in all of them, so we can just say yes. You can't look at him as a standout of any episode. Not to say that he's not a good utility player. He is. He's fine. He is fine. I'm doing my hardest to not totally dismiss him as a person, but he's not. There's no Joe episode that's like a big Joe episode, except for like anytime he takes his shirt off, which is honestly ridiculously impressive. I wish I could look that good. He's
a piece
of beef. Oh,
but he's tiny, right?
Yeah, he is notoriously quite a short gentleman. But that also, I think, enhances the beef. You know, like he's a very beefy dude. And I'm like, oh my God. Every time I'm like, I forgot. I keep forgetting that he looks like that when he's, you know, 30. You know what?
You know what's weird to me about the 90s is I think I was into tiny buff dudes at the time. So I probably, if I would have watched that show, would have been like, oh, that guy's hot. But but I don't know his work either. I just know that he is universally reviled, except for by a pile of 25-year-old haircuts and a bunch of 45-year-old wannabes. So, but that doesn't mean that there's not work for that guy. That guy's got work.
Now, he almost didn't have that. Well, I won't say he almost didn't, but he replaced two people, technically. The first person to have that part was Ray Romano, but by his own admission, really? Sucked at the table read, and he was fired after the table read.
Okay.
They then hired a guy named Greg Lee, who is only known, really, for hosting the show Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego?
Okay.
A show that I, as a young boy who was born in 1980, loved. Okay. And he plays Rick. And Rick is only supposed to be there for the first episode because they had to get that. The character was written. They had to get out of the way. They would recast if the show got picked up, and they did. So that's how that happened.
That's how Joe,
the stand-up. Yeah, it's weird.
Okay. So now, on the other hand, Vicki Lewis episodes.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So many good ones.
Yeah, I mean, she is also, I don't want to say utility player in this. They all are. Here's the thing is it is very much an ensemble show. That's a ton of people to put in a show, right?
Yep.
You can underwrite or you can just not feature. I would say Candy Alexander could be featured and underwritten, whereas I feel like her character, Vicki Lewis's character, was sometimes less featured, but she was always written well. And also you just gave the job to a perfect actress. She's just one of the funniest people who's ever walked this planet.
And that woman's name is
Vicki Lewis, the delightful Vicki Lewis,
whose name was Beth with no
Beth with no last name. That's correct.
That's right.
Yeah, I love her so much. She can do this thing that I, as an actor, still cannot manage to do, and that is realistically laugh on camera. Like, have your character act, like laugh. Her and Steve Carell are the two people I can think of who do it to the point where it's like it makes you want to laugh with them. And I don't get it. I don't understand what that skill is, but she has that.
So is she supposedly laughing at something that's real, or is she laughing to make other people laugh? Like, is she acting laughing, or is she just acting and something was supposed to have been funny?
You know, yeah, exactly. She's either acting and something is supposed to have been funny, but it's just a realistic laugh, like every time. Yeah. And it's, you buy it. You're like, okay, that could have almost been an outtake. The laugh was so good.
Okay.
And then when you do hear her actually laugh, it's basically that laugh. She just knows how to channel her actual, it's just good acting. You know?
Okay.
Yeah. She's a genius.
I like that. Now makes me self-conscious of my laugh.
Oh yeah,
but
me too. I get it.
I love the idea that there is a way to do such a thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
There's a space between ha 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 and like whatever you actually do, and finding it can be a little rough because I don't know, it's opening yourself up. But she's a Broadway actress. I feel like she's done a little bit of everything, and I feel like you do better if you've already had to go big and scream to the back of the house. You can shrink yourself down. It's easier to shrink yourself down than blow yourself up, I think.
One of the things in acting class they tell you, not that I have not acted enough to be a good actor. Turns out it's a learned skill. So, but I was told always overact because they can tell you to pull back.
Yeah.
Never underact because they won't bother to tell you to act bigger.
I did this thing in college. I only took a couple of acting classes. I've been acting forever, but I only took a couple of classes. So this was acting for the director. We did the Linguini scene from The Odd Couple. And the guy with me, he was good, but I didn't feel like either of us were channeling the emotion of that, even though it's a funny scene. So I said, here, let's do this. Do we have any prop guns? And so I had us play the whole scene with guns to one another's faces and scream the lines to each other. And then turns out like that actually got the dynamic going, and all we had to do was just suck it back in, and the scene worked. So that
makes sense. If you overact and then they're like, it's too much.
Uh-huh.
You're like, you can always pull back.
100%.
It's the opposite of putting salt in food.
Mm-hmm.
That actually is a perfect analogy. I don't know why I'm beating myself up there.
Shouldn't.
Okay. Acting. So is there any great acting happening besides Vicki Lewis? Like what are memorable scenes with Vicki Lewis that you, that you enjoyed?
Okay. So I'm trying to, there's so many, a lot of them are line reads. So I'm going to be thinking, because we would do this thing on our podcast. We're like, what's your favorite scene or what's your favorite line read? And a lot of times it was a line read.
What's a line read?
Like, just like her saying that these two characters are in love. She said, you guys are in love. And I'd never heard anybody say it that way.
Okay.
Love her. And it was just, she makes that funny somehow.
Yes.
So just her particular line reading of that, where I don't think anybody else would make it as funny. Same with Phil Hartman. She and Phil Hartman had the same power, which is give them any line and they'll make it work.
Okay.
And I think that's where like you could give him something ridiculous, like there's a scene in, again, my favorite episode, it's called Arcade, because they replace the sandwich machine with an arcade game that Dave turns out was addicted to as a kid. But the sandwich machine, Bill is very upset about because he loved those sandwiches beyond all else. And he
what the fuck is so good.
Oh,
that is hilarious.
Okay,
so
just wait, it gets better.
Office spacing, but not even office space, because office space was relatively realistic.
Uh-huh.
And
it gets crazier.
Okay. All right, start.
Say it again. Okay, so here's how it goes. There's a sandwich machine. It's making no money, okay? They replace the sandwich machine with an arcade game, and it's called Stargate Defender. If you're there are any video game nerds out there, they will know there was Stargate and Defender. They just combined the two because these guys were fucking dorks.
Right.
So, when Bill finds out that the arcade game is there and that there's no more sandwich machine, he flips out. And he's like trying to grab the old ones, including one that's been sitting behind the machine for years. He just loves them because they remind them of the sandwiches his mother made him when he was a kid. How does he say it? You know, she'd make a box of sandwich, 2 weeks worth of sandwiches, and leave them on a box on the porch for a couple of weeks. And just like he talked about the abuse and things he went through and neglect as though they were the most beautiful pastoral scenes. And you just talk about that. Memory. Yeah. Good times.
This is where I got lost when the video game replaced the sandwich machine.
Yeah.
I thought for some reason you had to win the video game to get a sandwich. That's what I would enjoy.
Not quite. That would be good. I like that though. But he keeps desperately trying to find other sandwiches. And as they run out, he tells Dave, we need to get the sandwich machine back. And he says, why, Bill? And he takes this weird hat that he's wearing. He's like, look, because without the preservatives in those sandwiches, I've been rapidly aging. He's dyed his hair gray. And he's like, do you believe me now, Dave? And Dave said, only if you dyed all of your hair white. And he says, I did. And there's something about that. This sort of Charlton Heston guttural thing that he pulls out of himself. That's a line read I've always liked. That whole episode is worth it. I've only given you like an eighth of what that whole episode is.
So that whole episode, so it's Phil Hartman panicking about the loss of the sandwich machine. How is anyone else responding to the loss of the sandwich machine?
No, they're just responding to what a fucking idiot he's being. They're just like, oh, Dave. Oh, Dave. Then, oh, Bill, you poor, poor man.
So, and then is now Dave Foley is responding to the fact that he loves this video game.
Yeah,
this is going to cut into productivity at the workplace.
This is exactly right. Now, he's afraid because he was addicted to this game in the 80s, as they say, pale, friendless virgins were at the time. And it is the subplot with him is Lisa wants to retake her SATs to prove that she's still as smart as she was in high school. They're dating. She wants Dave to take them with her. And he's like, but the reason I failed the SATs is because of that video game. That video game shows up. He gets addicted again. He is then, again, almost late for the SATs. And there's, again, this is also, I think, the first thing Lili Sobieski was ever in, by the way. She's in this episode as a under five teenager.
Okay.
There's a lot going on.
Who is that?
Lili Sobieski? She was an actress for a very long time, like a couple decades, but now she's retired-ish. Like, she's my age, but she's, like, retired, I guess.
What was she weird. In? After
I
this?
Can't remember anything now that you're saying it, but now you're
asking
me.
She was famous. Yes.
There are people who would know that name. I guarantee
and they
it.
Are yelling at their phones.
Yeah.
I will get an email at jackie@jackiecation.com to tell me if I forget to IMDb her before. Feel free to email me and tell me where she's working. Mm-hmm. But I will say this is...
Yeah.
This plot reminds me of a lot of 90s sitcoms seem to be more silly.
Uh-huh.
Even though I suppose maybe 2 and a Half Men was also super silly.
Maybe.
Because I wrote Two Specs when I first moved to Los Angeles in 1997. Sure. One wrote half of one for Spin City.
Mm-hmm.
And I made it way too political, and I stopped halfway through going, nobody's making this. Nobody wants this in their writer's room, Jackie. And then I wrote a Seinfeld, and that one was super silly, but only one plot. You know how Seinfeld had to have a plot for every character?
Sure. Yeah, yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So my plot for George was that he was riding the bus and the bus driver had a large belt buckle. And I had George make fun of that belt buckle and the bus driver kicked him off the bus. And so to make the bus driver like him, George just keeps wearing larger and larger belt buckles.
See, which, I like that.
Yeah, you would have loved that episode. You would have loved that plot line because that is very much a sight gag and a something that wouldn't happen, right? And that's what it sounds like, news radio.
It is, but they verge on this surreality that I love. And I, by the way, I'm putting a lot of sauce on this just because I love this show, and there's always an effort to justify your love for something like this.
Sure.
But I do think it is excessively surreal, and it gets there, especially the season finales of season 3 and season 4 are unexplainable to somebody who's never seen the show before. You can't dig into those first. It makes
me want to see that season. What? Just give us a taste of what that season one final episode is.
No, season one is fine. Season three and four are the two finales where they decided to say, we're probably getting canceled. Fuck it. Let's do a weird theme episode. This is right before Buffy decides to start doing that stuff, too. Like, they were just on the cusp of like hitting it first. Season
Buffy
three,
the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, because that show did, you know, musical episode and stuff like that. But this was just as normal. It's like if Cheers had decided to do like a weird theme episode. Season three's finale is called Space. What do you think happens? It's the space. The fucking station is a space station. And that's it. That is it. They just like an excuse to call things space credits or space news. Like it is. Yeah, it's 22 minutes of that. I have you can't see it, but I have Phil Hartman's space suit from that episode on my wall.
Oh, my God. That is quite a purchase. That's what that is. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
I've got one of his ties on this wall.
Okay.
One of the mugs from the episode on that up there. I'm obsessed. I think I've established.
Yeah. You started the podcast about news radio. What is that podcast called, by the way?
It's called Dispatches from Fort Awesome, a news radio podcast.
Okay.
And yeah, it's at WNYXnewsRadio.com.
Okay. There you go. Jason Klom.
There you go.
And is all of this stuff linkable from JasonKlom.com?
Probably.
There you go. And we're
hopefully
not worthy.
Hopefully I've done my work. Yeah.
Is a book. So if you go to sketchcomedybook.com, you will get all of the pre-order stuff and all of the information about that book.
I think
you got to interview different people about sketch comedy and how much they love it.
Yeah. Well, and mostly people who are involved with it. 150 people, and most of them have made 90s sketch shows.
Okay.
That includes Carol Burnett, but I didn't really talk
amazing.
To her much about her 90s sketch show. I talked to her about her original sketch show. So
in the 70s. Did you ever listen to a podcast? I listened to a podcast recently. Come on, you guys. I have two podcasts. I've listened to one. And it is the Julia Louis-Dreyfus Wiser Than Me podcast.
Oh, I need to give that a listen, actually.
10 episodes where she interviews old famous ladies about being old famous ladies.
She
interviews Jane Fonda, Amy Tan, Ruth Reichel. Who was head of Gourmet, I guess, magazine.
Okay.
And Carol Burnett is the last episode, but she also does, is it Diane Love, who was 20 Feet from Stardom?
Oh, okay. Wow. Yeah. I love that
documentary. Darlene Love. There we go.
Okay.
And some woman who was the head of the EPA.
Okay.
Fran Lebowitz.
Holy crap. Okay.
And who... I had listened to that one a couple of times because I want to like Fran Lebowitz, but when you first listen to it, you don't.
Well, she's got that Oscar Wilde thing where she'll say something that sounds like it's supposed to be a quip or it's supposed to be funny, and it's like, I guess in context, maybe that's fine. That's fine.
Right. Well, she's just a little, she was a little mean, but I listened to it again.
Oh, sure,
And I liked it better the second time, quite honestly, because I liked all of it, and I didn't know anything about Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Okay,
so. All I knew is that she played mean people on television.
Yeah.
Elaine, Veep, you know, those are not people I would invite to the house.
No.
And, so I have a hard time watching television about people I wouldn't invite to the house, quite honestly.
Fair.
So let's see. Was there any news on news radio? Did they ever do the news?
Yes. Occasionally there would be something like, they would constantly reference Governor Pataki. I think it's just 'cause they like the name. They would talk about a lot of local bridges and stuff because a lot of them were New York guys before they came to LA to make this show. Rarely, though, there was one whole episode that's about a Midtown bus crash or something like that, or a derailed train. That's what it is. It's a derailed train and a subway train. And Matthew sent off and he's trying to get a report from it and cannot. So it's about how they couldn't get the news done that day. So that's how dedicated they were to not doing the news.
Right. And it was the mid 90s, right? It ended in 99. Mm-hmm. And so Bill Clinton all had us in sort of a bit of a torpor. Like we were all just sort of going, oh, it's all working out. Yep. It's all working out. While Nazis machinations behind the scenes so that they could zoom in and creep us all out with their anti-abortion bullshit. Uh-huh. Anyway, Jackie Cation made a bees, you guys. So full of rage, it bleeds into the happy show that is the Dork Forest.
I get it.
It's hard not to. Not to get it. So there's very little news on the news radio. Is there radio? Is it all
plenty? Okay. There's plenty. I mean, you can't do that show without having Phil Hartman use that baritone and just, you know, say bullshit. Like, there's a whole episode where he says something that he's not supposed to say on the radio and then is asked to apologize for it. And then when he apologizes for it, everything that happens, every apology leads to some other tragedy. Where he says, you know, we should all just listen to our hearts. And then it turns out one unfortunately insane man cut his own heart out and put it to his ear. And it's, again, that's how absurd it is. But every time he does something, he has to re-apologize.
Oh, right. Because some listener did a thing.
Okay.
That's very funny. It wasn't like Kevin Spacey apologized with a guitar. Okay. So it wasn't like it didn't matter, the apologies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. I am sympathetic and supportive of that premise of Sitcomville. Mm-hmm. What's another episode? Do you have a favorite?
The Cane. Season 2, episode 9.
Zoom. Yes.
You cannot talk. The Smoking and the Cane are the two anybody ever pulls, even if they're slightly familiar with it. And if they've seen it, those are the two people who remember. I think they replayed them a lot. The Cane. The only plot that you need to remember is that Bill McNeil comes in one day with a cane for no reason whatsoever, makes a big fucking deal about it, and Dave steals his cane, and he needs to know where his cane is. And Phil Hartman saying, Jimmy, I need a pillow. My ass hurts. That is, for some reason, the funniest thing on the planet to me. And, like, getting to the point where it does turn out...
How does he even get there? How do you get there from cane to I need a pillow?
This is also, by the way, an episode featuring Jane Lynch, I should point out, as a five and
guest?
Under.
Oh,
yeah, she's a five and under on it. Like, nobody knew who the hell she was. She plays Jimmy's assistant, and they all have to have a meeting in Jimmy's big office, his big corporate office, but there are no chairs. He wants everybody to hunker down except for himself. And Bill wants a pillow and says his ass hurts, but he also says, Dave stole my cane. Like, that's, I don't know. There's so much beautiful little,
weird pettiness that goes around in a circle, but it's delivered with such amazing. Oh, by the way, whatever that arm is, I would like to buy one of those. So send me a copy of whatever that, because I bought one that was dumb. And so I'm holding my mic.
Oh, my old arms are all terrible and being used for other things right now. So I get
right.
It.
I would like to somehow recycle an old arm. I bought a very nice microphone and a bad arm. So the arm came. I think the arm was free. Okay. Yeah. This is digressed into a tech dorkdom. But because I like your arm of your mic arm. Good work.
I will send it to you.
All right. So just that. The cane.
The Cane is just such a good damn episode. And it's one of those things where I've been trying like so hard to either. I've spoken to the prop master. I either want the original cane, which the likelihood that that's anywhere is very low, or I need to know exactly what the head is because you can't see because the resolution on these old shows is so shitty. You can't see what the head of the cane looks like and nobody scanned it to HD. So I don't know. I'm obsessed with this kind of stuff. I have props from the show. I've tried to recreate them as well.
Right. Do you can you show us a grab the mug? Let me see.
Yeah, I can grab something.
Yeah,
sure,
you can grab something.
Oh, you know what? Here's what I'll do.
You can grab something that is indeed a prop from the show.
If there's one prop on this show that anybody ever remembers, it is the yellow mug. And this, while probably not screen used, is from the batch that were screen used.
WNYX.
WNYX.
Is that real? Like, is there a real, is there a real station called
there
NYX?
There is a WNYX. It doesn't have the same, it's not 585 AM, but there is a WNYX. I can't remember where it is, but I also have one up there that isn't broken. This one I had to repair that's here. And then the black one is a, from the space episode, but it doesn't say WNYX in NASA font, which it should.
Oh, sorry. See? I'm so sorry, prop person.
This is a problem.
You dropped the ball. It is not a problem. You are in the safest of all spaces, my friend.
I have, by the way, I have two boxes of shit here that if things get, I become a lull for the show, that I could at least be like, look, show and tell. I have so much shit sitting here because I have started an archive for the show and the archive continues. And I just got an email the other day where I'm going to continue archiving shit for the show, maybe even more than I had planned on. So
what is a lull?
Oh, if I'm boring is what I'm saying.
Oh, if there's
if
a lull.
If I become a lull on the show, I was just like, hey, look, this is the thing. Actually, here's one thing I will show you. It's not a prop, but I think you might appreciate it. So talk about another episode that's fantastic, and it's called Super Karate Monkey Death Car. I just realized how crazy that is to say out loud.
Yeah, super
there's
fun.
An episode with the delightful Brian Posehn is in it.
There you go.
He's great in it. Let's see who else. Well, anyway, it doesn't matter. He's great in it. Jimmy James writes an autobiography called Jimmy James Capitalist Lion Tamer. Doesn't sell well. It gets sent over to Japan, translated. Then it gets translated back into English. The name of the car, the name of the book is then Jimmy James Macho Business Donkey Wrestler. And so I have a friend. This is not
You're
a promo.
Right. It's impossible not to laugh at that. Congratulations, whoever came up with that plot. That's insane.
So I have a friend who decided, based on the few things that are in the episode, she wrote the whole book and then translated it and back translated. Do you see how thick this is? How much work went into this?
So this is that. That is a.
She's written this. This is insanity.
And what's the name of the book?
Capitalist Lion Tamer. It will also show up as Macho Business Donkey Wrestler. She also wrote Bill's autobiography. There's a whole episode called Bill's Autobiography where Bill McNeil can't manage to write his autobiography. And she uses every fact from every episode. She has a complicated spreadsheet. And she then went and wrote a book of she. Both of these books I wanted to write. And then thank God she took them off my plate because
what is
she did
her
a better
name?
Job. Her name is Lauren Weston.
Lauren Weston, you guys, you want to find a weird, ridiculous. So the plot of this episode was that the character, Jimmy James, writes an autobiography and it gets translated into Japanese and then translated back from Japanese back into English.
Yep.
And then it becomes a hit.
Okay. And then Brian Posehn asks questions like, what did you mean when you said feel my pain, donkey, 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 donkey? And that, come on, that coming out of Brian Posehn is just like straight face. It's just one of the most beautiful things you've ever seen. He, by the way, has played, he and Bob Odenkirk and David Cross all played two parts on that show in different episodes. There is an episode where they're all three of them together and it's phenomenal. They play Dave's old a cappella group, Barbershop Quartet. It's
great. Okay.
Yeah, it's great. It's
Crazyville.
It's complicated. I'm sorry.
It feels very complicated and delightful. Is there always just one main plot?
No, there are several, but there, you know, all of us, every time we would do the podcast, we'd be like, oh, I forgot that this one was in this episode. Cause to me, this is just the Kane episode. There's one, I think, that has only an A story and no B or C story.
Okay.
But I can never for the life of me remember anything beyond like what
the
most
A
people
story.
Consider the A story or like a C story I really love. You know, sometimes that happens too.
What is, now I need to ask, is there a C story you can think of offhand or probably not? Maybe not.
No, I can only think of the A story and B story of Arcade because, again, it's my favorite episode and I love it with all my heart.
So, yeah, because those two, and they intersected. So they intersected
so
well, which is so key in a lot of sitcoms. They have to intersect. Otherwise, why wouldn't you have just a different sitcom if they're just going to run parallel paths if they're never going to intersect that doesn't make any sense what's another favorite episode? We only have about 10 minutes left.
Oh really? Jesus Christ, I'm so sorry. This is my fault. See, this is the problem.
No, this is the best. This is the reason the show exists.
Wow, so we've already gone over Arcade. My God. No, we can't talk about that. We could, but it's not as fun. You know what, here we'll talk about the other weird crazy episode, which is the season finale of season 4, which is Phil Hartman's last episode because he was murdered like a month after they shot it.
Right.
And that is called Sinking Ship. The metaphor is intentional, but it is a Titanic themed episode. The whole thing is Titanic. They seal off some of it and flood some of the rooms. Phil Hartman has his pencil mustache and he's just talking like this the whole time because you know he's eating that shit up so much. They got some of the actual costumes from Titanic.
What is the conceit? Why is it the Titanic?
Because it opens up with Phil Hartman saying, "Have you ever wondered what it would be like if news radio took place in a ship?" And that's it.
Oh, and that is it.
Yeah. And it also, the openings are very dismissive, where he's just like, "I don't know why I'm here." Basically, that's the theme. Is like, why are we doing this? I don't know. Other than a big couple middle fingers to NBC.
Is anybody playing a violin? Do they talk about? Did Titanic come out yet?
Yeah. It had come out. Yeah, like a year before.
Okay, so it was a big deal, mm-hmm. which is why they went with Titanic.
Yeah.
So did somebody lose a ring? Was there a Rose character?
There is
reenact?
A Rose character.
Okay.
Basically, yeah, there's Lisa is the Rose character. And then she has a brief potential dalliance with the character named Walt, who's played by Brad Rowe, who doesn't really act anymore, but is great. He has a very short arc on that show, including that episode where they absolutely do the hands down, but it's the booth. It's the... one of the reasons I like talk about this show too is like you've seen this kind of shit on Community 15 years later.
Oh, right.
But people just don't acknowledge like how much work was put in on this show. There's also the show Spaced, which was also a very big influence on Community too. So they do all that kind of stuff. And Jimmy just plays the guy who owns and he owns the Titanic, basically, but they steer the fucking station into an iceberg. It still looks like a station from the outside. It's so stupid. It's so dumb, and it's beautiful.
Do you know, I can't remember who had this idea. One of Andy's friends had an idea for a show
mm-hmm.
that, of course, would not be made unless someone was a billionaire and decided to make it.
Okay.
And it would be an episodic Titanic show. Every episode, it would be 1 hour.
Mm-hmm.
Every episode, the Titanic would sink. And every episode, we would follow different characters.
I don't hate it.
And
I love it.
It would be like the Love Boat, but we would we would cross paths. Like in the first episode, it might be about the band.
Uh-huh.
And the second one, it's about some women who got off the ship. And uh-huh. in the second episode, they would pass the band. And they would sort of Groundhog's Day reenact the scene that we had seen the previous week.
Why has nobody made this show?
Right.
No, this is great. No, this is great. Get it to Damon Lindelof today. This needs to happen.
It could. It would be ridiculous and hilarious and without parallel. And by the way, without purpose.
Oh, yeah, of course. I would watch that in a second. There's no doubt about it. I would love it.
Right. Right. I will say this. Here's my, and before we have about five. We might have another 10 minutes still.
Okay.
But the sad story about Phil Hartman killing himself is I had just moved here.
Well, he was murdered. I should point that out. He was murdered.
Oh, wait. His wife killed himself.
His wife killed him and then killed herself because she came down from the drugs and probably realized what she had done. Yeah.
And 2 weeks earlier, I met her.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She had just gotten out of rehab.
Okay. Yep.
And a woman who was an acquaintance of mine brought her to one of my shows and said, "This is Phil Hartman's wife. She just got out of rehab. I'm taking her drinking. Do you want to come with us?" And I was like, "That is a terrible idea. What are you, nuts?" And she was like, "She just spent 30 days without booze or drugs, Jackie." And I was like, "Yeah, we." And then 2 weeks later on the news, you know, this was also in the heyday when the news would, there were live chases on the highways.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was two things happened that week where it was like I had a temp job at a closed captioning company. And so we had the TV on.
Okay.
And the news was they were chasing somebody and the guy got out of his car and killed himself.
Oh, wow.
And they showed it live on television.
Wow.
At 3 p.m. In 1998
or
97 or whatever it was. And they had to do, they decided with those chases that they would mm-hmm. had to do a feed lag because there were children home from school and it interrupted all of the programming. Cause we all watched it cause it was a fascinating world of whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, it was, I had to be the same week when I was like, wait, Bryn Hartman?
Yeah.
And I didn't know who Phil Hartman, I didn't watch the show.
Okay, but, sure.
But I knew that Phil Hartman was beloved and revered. And
sure.
I was like, and I think he had been at the improv. I never got to meet him. But that is my weird, sad, gossipy story that for some reason has come up three times in the last 2 weeks.
Oh, my God. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, you know. He was my hero. Like, I've had several heroes, of course. Like, that's what we do. But, like, he was a guy I was like, I'm going to get to L.A. and I'm going to do voiceover with that guy. That was my dream. And
when did you move here?
5 years later. Okay. You know, yeah. I was 18 when he was 17 when he was killed.
Okay.
And I was just like, oh, fuck. I mean, like, obviously, I'm sad that a human being has been lost. But there's the ego part of me is like, well, fuck, that's never going to happen now. But I do.
Right.
The tie of his that I have on the wall, I'm going to wear the second I get like a good animation voiceover thing. So that's going to be as close as I will get. But that's what I'm going to do with that tie.
Just for luck. Yeah.
Phil Hartman's tie. Fuck yes. I can't wear the whole jumpsuit. That would make me look like a doofus. But I'll wear the tie.
Right. But maybe you will have gotten that job because you're a doofus.
I mean, I hope so. That's pretty much my only thing I can do.
I'm going to be on one episode of that Strange Planet show on Apple.
Amazing.
Because I love that cartoon.
Yeah.
But in my voice, I play sibling. I play one of the, I play a sibling.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really get a lot of direction as far as, and the way I always read his cartoon was sort of like a very conehead kind of thing.
Sure.
Well, that I don't think is how everybody else read it, like just no contractions.
Okay.
Just normal reading, but no contractions. So I wish I could do a rereading of that. But I hope there's another episode with the sibling and I get to play the sibling again. But I'm in episode. Yeah.
It's its own standout thing then now. So you have stood out officially then. If it's that weird, then you've stood out. So whatever.
It. Yeah. I usually want to stand out in more positive. okay. So So if somebody was to start this show today.
Yeah.
First of all, where are they streaming it?
Oh, my God. I don't even know. I think you can get it. I think you can maybe get it on Prime. It's really hard to find.
Hey, Siri,
can get it on Prime now. Oh, yeah. There we go.
Where can you stream News Radio? I just asked Siri, you guys.
Thank you. Because for a while,
currently,
it was
you're
on
able
Crackle.
To watch News Radio on Amazon Prime, Fubo TV, Crackle, or for free with ads on the Roku channel, Pluto TV. It's also possible to buy News Radio as a download on Apple iTunes, Amazon Video, and Google Play Movies. Thank you, Siri.
Or if you're old like me, just buy the damn set, the box set of News Radio for like $10 on eBay. You're good to go. It's fine.
Oh, there you go. So what would be a good... Would you recommend people start from the first episode, or would you...
I would say start with The Cane or Smoking. One of those two is the best inroad. That's what all of, since doing this podcast, we have a very large group of, we actually call ourselves dorks because the word dorks is recurring on the show. So it's perfect for this show.
Oh,
but our
is.
News Radio dorks on the social media, we have a little group chat. We all agree that it's The Cane or Smoking that is what you introduce your friends with.
And which season are those two in? Are they
the
in
Cane
early
is,
season?
Is season three, and then Smoking is... other way around. Season one is Smoking, season two is The Cane.
Okay.
And then once you're going to see the best episodes in season three, probably.
Okay. The best episodes as a season, you would go season three?
I think so, even though there's some really great shit in season four. Season three is pretty hardcore and beautiful.
Do you know where Vicki Lewis is today?
She's doing Broadway. I don't know what she's doing right now. She might be doing Into the Woods, if I remember correctly, but she's still doing just a shit ton of Broadway.
Do you know where any of the other people are besides Andy Dick and Joe Rogan? I think we both know where those guys are.
Yeah, we do.
And Phil Hartman. Foley is doing stand-up, if I remember correctly.
Probably. I mean, that one season that they got of the new season of The Kids in the Hall was fantastic that they did last year. That was really good. He's still he's still a job and actor, but like just doing a great job. And I'm sure hopefully they've got touring plans as a group together. That would be great. Candy Alexander, again, jobbing actor. I know that she moved from L.A. She's somewhere else, but she's still acting up a storm. Then you get your Maura Tierney. She's on everything still, bits and
is
pieces.
She?
Well, yeah, she was on The Affair, if I remember correctly. I've never seen it, but so
she's just doing like one or two episodes 1,000 times a year kind of thing.
Yeah,
so she's probably.
Probably
striking right now.
Yeah.
Like if I go strike, I might run into her.
Tell her I say hi. Don't tell her I have a crush on her. Just tell her I say hi.
I'll try not to make it weird.
Okay, please.
I have picketed twice. Mm-hmm. I should have gone out again today. This week is actually going to be a pretty cool week mm-hmm. in LA, so it's probably a good week to strike. So it's a good, I should get out there. Jason Klum, thank you so much for all you've done, quite honestly. All of the podcasts you've had in the past, all that you'll have in the future.
Sure.
Helping me out with my WordPress and sending me that where I could buy that arm.
Oh, yeah.
You have a new album, not a new album, new book coming out.
I do.
And it is going to be called We're Not Worthy.
Yeah.
And you could pre-order it probably everywhere. But if you go to sketchcomedybook.com,
mm-hmm.
you will be given more information than you need.
I think so. And here's that subtitle for you. From In Living Color to Mr. Show, How 90s Sketch TV Changed the Face of Comedy. There, I said it.
There, he said it, you guys. Jason Klum. And it's
with a foreword by David Wayne. I'm sorry, I didn't say it.
Yay! Sorry. At Jason Klum, K-A-K-L-A-M-M, is how you spell that. And it's mm-hmm. on Instagram. And it's J Klum on Twitter. But mm-hmm. feel free to avoid that. And Rangers,
yeah,
you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
Hi, Adal. How was the show?
It was great. I'm using a new interface, so let's see what happens. We tried to do it earlier. It didn't take.
It didn't take.
All right. Let's maybe if we both face. Hi. Hello. Hi, Rangers.
Hado.
This is the cuddliest bonus episode ever of the Dork Forest. Andy Ashcraft.
I don't mind it.
You don't mind it? The episode was about news radio. It was with Jason Klum. He wrote a book, We're Not Worthy, from Wayne's World.
Right. About news radio?
About news radio. And news radio was a sitcom.
Uh-huh. Yep. One of my favorites, in fact.
That is ridiculous. And you actually were telling me.
I don't even like sitcoms, but I like that one.
Right. You don't like sitcoms.
I don't like sitcoms, generally speaking. But you know what? I really like that one. And it felt like the spiritual child of WKRP in Cincinnati.
Which he claims to have not seen. He's only seen a handful of them.
That blows my mind.
Is it a crime against humanity?
It is. He's watched news radio. He's written a book about news radio.
No, he's written a book about 90s sketch comedy.
Oh, okay. Hints.
Coming from it, Dave Foley, Kids in the Hall.
Yes, of course.
Phil Hartman was on Saturday Night Live. Right. Yeah, I think Andy Dick was on Fridays.
Right, and I think they all came out of that sketch.
Oh, the Groundlings.
The Groundlings, right.
Okay, and so there were favorite episodes. There was the episode where Jimmy James got a cane.
One of my favorite actors of all time was in that show, and that's him. That
what else has he done?
I don't know. Gosh, he's...
Really?
Yeah,
he works.
He works. Oh, yeah. He totally works.
Well, you know, they got 97 episodes.
Wow.
Right, which is a disappointment.
Enough.
Right. 100...
Three episodes shy...
Of the syndication trifecta.
That's a crying shame.
It is a real crying shame and very sad. But John Lovitz replaced Phil Hartman.
Phil Hartman, right.
And my brother Russ was telling me his favorite episode and that John Lovitz was Phil Hartman's best friend, which I did not know, which was a weird casting choice.
That is a weird casting choice. He must have been like friends with the producers and they were just like, oh, shit, what are we going to do? All right.
Right. As opposed to, you're really sad. Why don't you replace him also on this TV show? That would be a terrible thing for
producers. Did he play the same character?
No.
Oh, okay.
So he played a replacement character.
Okay.
He might have got a sitcom out of that. Wasn't he on a sitcom after John Lovitz?
Hasn't he been on sitcoms all his entire life?
He's been on many sitcoms.
Hasn't
you're right.
Hasn't he been on sitcoms for the last 1,000 years?
Right. Well, now he's currently doing a show at the Rio at 5 p.m.
At the Rio?
In Las Vegas.
Oh, that's right. Because that's his theater, right?
I believe so. He's got some sort of standardized, you know, curated. What's that called? When they stay there and for the whole time of their life, they just have a theater.
Right.
Like Penn and Teller.
Yeah. Penn and Teller have their theater there as well.
Right. And, but he replaced, I think it was the last three episodes. I want to see it.
Yeah.
My brother Russ's favorite episode was the one where Candy, the only black character,
mm-hmm.
has a dream where the entire staff of the news radio group is black. And then she wakes up and she's like, Oh, that would have been great. And because Jason Klomp told me that she left the show because they didn't do anything with her, that they didn't have enough like storylines for her.
Right, right, right. She was very much like the background, almost a background character.
Right. Sidekick to Phil Hartman.
Kind of. Yeah.
And so Russ was saying that it was like standing next to the sun.
kind of. I mean, not really. I mean, his character was really two-dimensional in that show.
Who was three-dimensional?
Well, Jimmy James was.
Oh, was he?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. And Dave Foley and the gal who's
the love interest.
Who's the head of the head news lady.
Jason Klum also told me that they don't do the news, really. They never mention the news.
No, no, no. It's all internal office politics. And my favorite episode is there's a heat wave, and they're always going into Jimmy James's office to complain about each other and worry him about the things going on in their personal lives and this and that. And as he's listening to one of them, probably Dave Foley, he climbs out the window and throws himself out of the window, and they're up on like the 14th floor. And then it snaps back, and he's only imagined it.
Yeah, I need to. I kind of need to see I need to at least see four episodes. The two that Jason loved, the one that Russ liked, and the one that you liked. Jason Klomm, by the way, it's at Jason Klomm, JasonKlamm. And he has a podcast about news radio. He has a new book coming out in September of 2023, of course, called We're Not Worthy, about sketch comedy. And he also designed and helped me set up the Dork Forest website many years ago.
Which looks excellent.
He did a great job. Rangers, I don't know why I have to say it twice, but because I haven't figured out a different way to head out. But
huddo, huddo, huddo.
Huddle in and say, be good to each other. Take care of each other. Help somebody in front of you. Hope, courage, all those things. Okay, bye.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?